this side.
Which one is he?
I don't know.
You're over here. Okay.
He's always late anyhow, so this now he has to find the space.
Champaign County Mental Health Board. Stephanie, we need the roll call, please.
Astrid Bergson.
Here.
Island Danovy.
Here.
Bill Gleason.
Yep.
Here. Susan Fowler. Dolores Henry.
Here.
Mike McClellan.
Here.
Tom Moore.
Here.
Julian Rappaport.
Here.
Deborah Townsend.
Here.
Thank you. The next agenda item is citizen input and public participation. So if anyone in the audience would like to speak, please come forward, turn on the mic, and state your name, please.
Hi, I'm Nancy Carter. I'm the new president of the NAMI chapter in Champaign, National Alliance on Mental Illness, and I passed out a handout about NAMI Homefront. The Veterans Administration has asked our particular affiliate, we're one of two in the state of Illinois, the other one is in Peoria, to partner with them to offer classes, free, six classes, starting the 23rd, which is next week, Tuesday, at Colony West Clubhouse for veterans family members. In other words, if your husband or your spouse has been in any kind of a conflict, and you feel like you need help with where they are at with their mental health, we're offering this class called NAMI Homefront, 6:30 to 9 for six consecutive Tuesday nights. So if you have someone that you know that would benefit from this, we'd be happy to entertain having them with us. The contact information is at the bottom. Ann and Robbie Russell are going to be teaching the class, and they went to Washington, D.C. for a weekend to be trained. So it's a trained class. It's based on our family-to-family class, which is a 12-week program, so they're trying to cram it all in. So does anybody have any questions? It's 6 weeks, right. It's six times. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? Okay. The next agenda item is the SILA Expansion RFP Evaluation Committee. And it's like in two parts. So the first thing that we have to do is approve the Evaluation Committee minutes on August 13, 2014, which is the RFP opening, and August 22nd, 2014. So I need a motion and a second to
approve those.
Okay. Yeah. So should we do it now or wait until, do it now?
Yeah, do it now.
Okay. So Evaluation Committee, you know who you are. So I need a motion.
And the minutes be approved.
It's been moved by Deb.
Second.
It's been second.
Third.
Okay, it's been moved in second. Now, does anybody have a question or a comment that they would like to make on the Evaluation Committee? Okay, hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so the minutes have been approved. Now, in terms of the presentation tonight, we have some ground rules that I'll just review so we can all be on the same page. The background is the Evaluation Committee met on August 22nd, and you saw the minutes. We had two proposals of providers were selected for oral presentation. That was the Individual Advocacy Group and United Cerebral Palsy. This decision was based on the composite scoring of the proposals and vote of the Evaluation Committee. IAG was invited with the proviso that they would agree to the requirement that the respondent would sign the lease. Now, tonight, we have some oral presentations from UCB and IAG, and we couldn't decide how to do this, so we're going to flip a coin before we get going. And the person who wins the right side of the coin goes first. The second oral presenter will be asked to leave the meeting during the first oral presentation. This is to make sure that the second presentation doesn't gain advantage from listening to the first presentation and the questions that were asked by the Evaluation Committee. Each organization gets 30 minutes, no more than 30 minutes, for their presentation. Following the presentation, the Evaluation Committee will have 15 minutes allotted for discussion. A vote will follow using paper ballots that will be provided. A simple majority will constitute the Evaluation Committee's recommendation. The Champaign County Mental Health Board will then seek a motion to ratify the Evaluation Committee recommendation. And then we can do any other business that we have time for, but we have to adjourn at 6 o'clock p.m. sharp tonight. Any questions about the ground rules? Okay, then hearing none. Okay, Peter. Where's your coin?
I'm going to just also say that we have Dr. Yarnell from UCP and Dr. Brooks and Dr. Bennett from IAG here. I'm just going to flip a coin, and heads will be IAG. If it comes up, you will go first. If it's good enough for the Super Bowl, I think it's good enough for us. Heads it is. So IAG, Dr. Bennett.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're starting at 4:40 p.m., so you have until 10 after 5.
Just for what we were hoping would be that you'd just give us kind of a brief overview, given that you've looked at, you've heard what the evaluation committee said, and then that we would like to have some time for the evaluation committee members and then board members to ask questions if they have them. So.
Okay. So we start talking about our organization. Dr. Brooks and I co-founded IAG back in 95 after managing the Medicaid programs for people with disabilities throughout the state of Illinois. We worked directly with the Healthcare Financing Administration. It was during that time in managing that program, but we felt very, very strongly, very passionately that people have the right to live in their own homes, live in a community, have total integration, live with just a few people, and be part of neighborhoods. We believe that deeply and passionately. When we left the state, we started our first small setting in 1997. And from that, we gained the experience and understood and realized when people are happy and they're part of a life, part of a neighborhood, part of a community, there's endless possibilities. We have recently, our organization supports people throughout the state in community of choices with roommates that they have preferred to live with. We provide not just those opportunities, but creative opportunities during the day. Community without walls, meaning that we have it based on their choice and based on their customized person-centered plans. It's a passion, and we believe in the can-do spirit that anything's possible.
The basis of the program, as Dr. Bennett described, is that we want people to be integrated in the community. And that's why we selected people living in a house, in a community, in a neighborhood, not located nearby a neighborhood, but actually next door to you. And the concept is that's where they grew up, and that's where they should keep living. And if you talk to families who have children aging out of special education, that's where they want their child to be when they grow up, is next door still. Being part of the community, getting a job, and living a long and full life. So in the development of this program, we decided that a setting of four or smaller was family size. Arbitrary perhaps, parents and two children, but that adds up to four. Every program we've had since we began the SILA program is four or fewer people. It's been very consistent. Wherever we are throughout the state of Illinois, that's the model we have used, and we've used it successfully, and it can be done. We've done it since 1999. So in combination with this is the day program, where we have a large range of options for people. We work with people who have very good skills, who can go out and get jobs. We work with people who have very severe physical and cognitive disabilities. We work with a full range of people. But again, as much as we can, we want people to have choices. We want people to have opportunities. We want people to be able to change their mind at different points in their life. Nothing stays the same. So all of those are options. Since we've been doing this for 15 years, some people have changed their minds. That's fine. They want to live with Bob. Now they don't want to live with Bob. Choices are there, and we try to provide those opportunities. So the whole model is a natural one, and one based on the person and the person's interests and choices. And that's where we have developed a program, and we'll continue it in that fashion.
Any questions?
I'm sorry, I haven't had an opportunity to learn very much about AIG, so could you talk a little bit about the number of homes that you have established? And
yes, individual advocacy group supports people, and I'm going to kind of go through the locations. We have a support system in the Quad Cities. in that location. We support persons, about 55 individuals, ranging from disability for persons that live in apartments, that have physical disabilities, to people in homes. We then provide customized day supports to, in the Quad Cities, about 65 individuals. In Springfield, Illinois, we support persons that are living in host families. In addition, in that location, we have, I think there's 25 individuals that live in 24-hour small customized settings. In the day program, the experience, we have over 30-plus. When we start heading toward, I'm trying to think, the DeKalb County, I'm kind of going through the state. DeKalb County, we support people in the Sandwich area, Sominok, Plano, Yorkville, Aurora, Bolingbrook, Naperville, Crest Hill, Joliet. I know I'm missing some areas. Oswego, Frankfort, and then we head to the Chicago South location. In terms of customized day supports, we provide the hub within Sandwich, Oswego, Romeoville, and we also provide customized supports to people that have significant physical and medical challenges, from individuals that require total assist positioning, persons with G-tubes, and those supports are in Glendale and Bloomingdale. In terms of total numbers of people we support, because it's homes, it's settings, over 230. And we also provide supports to people in Maryland and Washington, D.C.
This is a little different than we normally do it. I would like the evaluation committee members to, if they have questions, that we take those first and then we go to the board members. So.
I have questions. And
also, I would like to introduce that Mark Doyle is here from the governor's office, who's sitting on our committee. Mark, we're really happy that you made it down and appreciate your interest in this project.
Thank you for inviting me.
I have a question. I'm really interested in your plans for day programming and training. Have you surveyed this community in regards to options for customized employment?
We have linked up with another organization that we talked about forming a partnership and looking at how we can collaborate together in those areas. We have not yet started doing the customized employment yet, because we're not quite certain in terms of the individuals that we support. We want to start with the customized person-centered discovery process to determine what they would choose to do.
We'd like to anticipate that time frame being?
In terms of when we would start? That would be part of the beginning process when decisions have been made by individuals and guardians from the day that we start. We would start the customized plan.
We don't have a specific date, if that's what you're asking.
And not.
I was looking like time frame. Yeah. You would expect them to be in actively in some sort of a customized program, say 6 months.
Oh no!
If
from our perspective is we would start the supports from day one. But in terms of jobs, you know, we can't say what kind of jobs people want without deferring to the individuals and knowing what it is their preferences are. But in terms of the customized day experience, that would be part of the plan from day one. You know, it may be an individualized mentor in the community, you know, doing different community-based scheduling. It may be identifying through the discovery process with a customized plan what they're looking to do. Our experience has been with jobs. People that become part of that process of discovery and strengths and helping us with them determine what kind of work they would like becomes more effective in the future. So,
okay, you mentioned in your book or your proposal from people from, or actually just a few minutes ago, people that are capable. Keep people that are capable of holding a job in the mm-hmm. community. And all the way through to severely disabled that are probably unlikely to hold a job in the community. What do you have? You're going to have programs within the house itself to meet those needs.
Well, first, the state wouldn't allow that. Part of what we would look to do is, you know, we've already, for another group, have already hired a professional. We've already talked about putting together the customized day experience for the individuals that are involved. And part of what we are looking at is utilizing some of the community resources that exist here in this area. We talked about the Y, some of the culinary arts, linking up to some of the areas that she's most familiar with. The plan would be for those individuals and meeting with the families is having one or two employees do the customized mentorship and then have the scripted schedule broken down by time frame during the day for that experience. That is part of how we would start it. We're not looking, we're, you know, we've actually had some review of location, but we want to work with the state and not have this be necessarily a building program as much as a community integrative experience.
I do have a question. Can you share how your approach in implementing an individualized behavior plan for a client with behavioral challenges would differ from the typical cookie cutter approach?
Good question. We do have some experience working and supporting people with more challenging needs. Part of how we provide supports to people with higher end needs is we, again, this is not this area because we're not here, but how we've done in other locations is it's a very complex system insofar as we provide support to the individuals with some very experienced direct support staff, with very experienced, qualified professionals. Usually we have a board-certified behavioral analyst. We may have a clinical licensed social worker. We have the qualified intellectual disability professional. We get input from an array of the nurse. We have, at least in our organization, we've been very lucky. We have 9 nurses on staff, RN certified trainers, and so it all becomes part of a very intense integrative team to support those individuals. What we find is that it has to be people that know the individuals that are in the trenches, observing, watching, and doing whatever it takes to keep people, first of all, safe, second of all, understanding what triggers off the behavior. So it's very detailed, but
of it's a learning experience on our part, because if they're new to us, all we have is records, which can be useful or not. So we have to have, we have to live together, the individual and us, so that we can better understand what are some of the driving characteristics that lead to a behavior. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's just how they interact with someone else. Things they have learned, we look at if it's behavior, it's something we're looking at as a history. They're bringing the behaviors to us. Mm-hmm. From their experiences of what has worked for them in the past doesn't work here. That's our behavior problem we're going to deal with. Mm-hmm. So it's a process. So we don't have a magic bullet for this. It takes a while. It
takes a lot of work.
To initiate a change in the behavior. We have been successful doing this over time, but it takes a while.
But you're not opposed to making changes to that behavioral plan as the need arises in order to assist them in being successful.
And we support people that have the dual diagnosis of the intellectual disability with a diagnosed mental illness. And so it's really fascinating to see, you know, how behavioral analysts will look at it one way, perhaps a mental health another way, and it's really pulling it all together. And we look at the communication systems, because sometimes people have behaviors if they're frustrated by the lack of communication. So it's pretty involved.
And then my next question is, are you opposed, if you find that your internal behavioral plan is not successful, are you opposed to reaching out and networking?
It has to change as needs change. You can't be rigid, you know, and you can't have somebody who's never met the person write a plan and think it's going to work.
Right.
You know, because life, you know, you need to know people.
Yeah. We look at the plan every 6 months and evaluate whether there's a change in behavior. We look at medications the same way. If the medications is supposed to have an effect on improving the behavior, did it? And if it doesn't, then we reevaluate again. So we're always reevaluating.
Right. Okay. A formal evaluation every 6 months, but it's ongoing. because, you know, if something needs a change, you don't wait. You affect change when it's necessary.
Okay. Time out. We have 15 minutes to go, so does anybody else have a question?
I do. Mike, I have a kind of a two-part question. The governor's office, about 2.5 years ago, in partnership with the Department of Human Services, specifically the Division on Developmental Disabilities, created a process called ACT, which stands for Active Community Care Transitions. It was a process that utilizes a person-centered approach to supporting individuals in the community. And one of the requirements of all the applicants was to tell us their involvement in the ACT process. And so my questions are, how many folks have you supported through this process since it started? And the process itself was created with the person-centered planning being the important component of it, which basically looks at not only what's important for the person, but to the person. But the individuals that were served in the ACT process primarily came from state-operated developmental centers. Many of the folks that are in need of services here in Champaign County are either Ligas class folks, settled folks, or folks from the PUNS list. Could you tell us a little bit also about your thoughts about utilizing a person-centered planning process with those individuals?
We support, I believe, 12 to 13 individuals that were part of the closures. We were worked very strongly with the creative teams of ACT in the CRA process. It was a very, very strong customized person-centered plan. Our teams met with those teams, and the plans were developed based on choices, based on dreams, based on desires, and it's been highly effective. Every one of those individuals who have been, some of them since the age of 4, and they're 50 years old, are now living in their own home in the community and doing fabulously. So in terms of the person-centered plan and working with ACT and having the same principles and philosophies, we looked at having them drive their own plans based on needs that either the guardian or the individual and the individual identified. And we then took those plans and then customized the supports.
Right, but the ACT process and its evaluation process developed a person-centered planning process that they shared with providers.
Well,
whoever
what
that
happened
may be,
was,
but
yeah, we
folks
did,
that are coming
yeah.
out of Champaign County may not have been or participated in that process. So could you elaborate on what you would be doing as far as person-centered planning to get to what's important to in person?
With CRA, they have done the preliminary person-centered review. They have identified the community. They have identified what the individual wants. They've identified what some of the supports and needs were. And then if that person comes from the state facility, we would meet and take those supports that were identified and begin the customization. And those were the ways we started with the state individuals. So for an example, they identified the kind of day supports they wanted. They customized the type of roommates they wanted. They identified what worked in the past in terms of behavioral supports. They identified some of the food preferences. It's so detailed in terms of the individual, and our teams work together with the training of the employees. Our teams work together in customizing a plan, identifying goals and objectives, and making it and created a day in the life experience. For those that are not part of the CRA process, our teams do the very same type of approach. From interviewing the individuals, we have a very discovery component to the plan in identifying what individuals want to do in terms of their future. We take a look at the techniques and strategies and the communication systems at work. We take a look at and identify food choices. We look at the health issues, and from that, then a very detailed, specialized plan is created. I don't know if that's answering.
Thank you.
I have one question. When we read your proposal, you indicated that you like to sign leases with individuals. So I guess my question is, as part of this process, will you, the respondent, be signing the leases?
We are aware that this is part of the requirement. It is something that we, we've never done that, very candidly, because we've always believed that it's the individual's home. It's, we believe strongly it's an empowerment that people want to live in their own home and not have other people tell them that they're guests in another home. So we are, you know, we have discussed this, and it is, it would be a very different approach for us. And we understand that in order to do this, we would have to agree, and that's something that we have to
So we can make informed decisions. Are you prepared to say that you will agree or you won't agree?
If we accept it, we have to agree. If we review this and say, you know, afterwards that we just can't, I mean, it's just such a different way of thinking because we have been having individuals sign off and it's their home. But in this situation, we are aware of the requirements.
It's a unique situation for us, and we since we're here, we can agree to do that.
Okay.
It doesn't mean we won't come back and talk to you about it again, though.
Because it really is a different philosophy. It truly is. It
I understand,
truly is.
But...
So we all can stretch in a new direction.
So we can all be on the same page
we
before...
We have to be. We understand the requirements, yeah. But it is, you know, I mean, yeah. we are so accustomed, it's, you know, it's going to be challenging.
And it's possible that we'll all be pushed that way anyway by the further guidance regarding the CMS regs.
But for our purposes...
that is a new direction.
It's possible we'll have to... everybody will have to do it that way.
Right.
I know, but for our purposes tonight, I think we just need, you know, a commitment that given the contract, it won't be an issue because...
It can't be an issue because that's your requirements. We will have to, after the meeting and all, we decide if it's a good match or not.
Okay, thank you. Mike?
I feel very much in the dark, which I guess is where I'm supposed to be.
And I'm still very much in the dark, which I understand the process, or I think I do, but I know nothing about y'all. Could you tell us about your educational background and how you moved into this particular area? Not geographical
into Champaign
area.
Or just the field itself? You're talking about the field itself?
Right.
I've been in this field going on 38 years, maybe longer. I can't. I started out by being a school principal when I was very young and worked with special needs populations. I was an exec prior to creating the organization with Dr. Brooks. Dr. Brooks and I managed for the state of Illinois for the developmentally disabled, the intermediate care facilities for the developmentally disabled. Together, we shut down 13 facilities that were not very good. We rewrote the rate system. We rewrote the quality assurance system. We made some huge changes, and we got an award from the federal government of having the largest impact in the state of Illinois to date for persons with developmental disabilities. When we left the state, what year did we leave? 93. We were approached by a department to help them stabilize youth that had developmental disabilities, mental health issues, and provide them a partnership with customized wraparound services. And we together with another state department, kind of shocked the world because we were able to keep children in communities and homes without having to be placed in residential long-term care settings. And we were very, you know, we began supporting people from out of state. We returned them home. We had customized staff that followed clients around, and it worked. From there, then, Dr. Brooks and I worked with the department in getting the TBI waiver program on the books in the state of Illinois, because up until date, people with traumatic brain injuries were living in nursing homes, and so we worked with the department in getting that waiver so people with traumatic brain injuries could stay at home. Then we started the SILA program in 1999 as a result of one of our individuals that I was a personal advocate for who lived in a nursing home at the age of 9, was not a happy young man, was tired of his life, and pleaded with us to please start services for him. He has cerebral palsy, he's completely physically challenged, needs complete attendant care, and he lives in a two-person apartment with 24-hour staff, and he is the happiest man today, speaks throughout the state about his care. We just believe passionately that, you know, people have the right to be part of a community. So that's, you know, we have over 250 people that we've supported.
What about this guy?
Okay,
okay, we have 3 minutes.
And I have a doctorate. So.
I have a PhD in psychology and memory cognition and neuropsychology. I was an assistant professor at Illinois Institute of Technology. I got a grant with DMHDD back in 1980 to bring people from out of state back to community programs. It was for an individual who has severe behavior issues. And then I went to ARC of Illinois in 1985 and developed the Vogard lawsuit, class action suit, that successfully forced the state to provide active treatment services to people in nursing homes. I was offered a job with Public Aid in 88 to develop the Bureau of Disability Services and developed a rate system that the state still uses, oddly enough, I guess. And Dr. Bennett and I worked to make changes in that system, which was very successful. And then she gave the history of everything after that.
Thank you.
We have time for one more question. Julia.
Could you say something about, given your vast experience in this, I'm sure that there will be... Given your vast experience, I'm sure that you must have encountered times when things aren't working. So I guess what I'd like you to do is give us some idea, what could we expect would be worst case scenarios when things are going wrong? What sort of difficulties are we like would may happen? I mean, you understand what I'm asking you about here. I understand the successes, but that can't be that every single thing is completely problematic, non-problematic, and always perfect. So what should we anticipate thinking ahead of time about that would be difficulties for us?
You know, I'm trying to think situations where it may not have worked. First of all, our attitude has always been to keep trying. Keep try. You know, Stanley Ligas, who, you know, the Ligas lawsuit, lives in one of the homes that we support. And his example was when he first came, he chose to live with some roommates, and after 6 months, he couldn't stand them. So we had to reboot with him and the family and everyone else and start from scratch in identifying another home and working with that. That would be an example of something we tried that didn't work, and then we had to start up again. The worst case scenario, I'm just trying to think, is, you know, we do have persons, and very rarely, if an individual has extreme behaviors that needs to go, I don't even know if that would even... What was that?
Mental health.
Yeah, they have a mental health issue with onset of psychosis or schizophrenia. They may need to get stabilized. We have a female right now who, at the age of 22, we worked with a psychiatrist who actually does consultation with the FDA, said that this is the most complex person he's seen in a while. And so she's really unstable and can't stay right now in the home because she's unsafe. So that would be an example of what didn't work, that she's in an environment and she needs to have her Clozaril stabilized because there were some issues with the blood count. So that would be an example, perhaps.
Thank you very much, doctors.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hello.
If you're ready, you can start.
I would be happy to start. I'm Brenda Yarnell. I am the president and CEO. Am I speaking in the mic? Okay, Brenda Yarnell. And I'm the president and CEO of United Cerebral Palsy Land of Lincoln. I've been there for now 34 years. So we are a regional organization. I just want to take a couple of minutes and tell you a little bit about United Cerebral Palsy. Some of you may not have heard our name, or you may have read our name, but not really know what we do. So just a couple of minutes of that, and then I'm going to go right into my comments. We are a regional organization that's based out of Springfield, but we have offices in Bloomington, Decatur, Champaign, and we have services and staff in Gibson City, Wilmington, and Marseilles, Illinois. So we are not a national organization. We are a regional Central Illinois organization serving multi-communities here in Central Illinois. Our name is United Cerebral Palsy, but it's a little bit of a misnomer. We are part of a national organization that has a very strong public education and advocacy office in Washington, D.C. They're very, very well known for their public policy and their legislative work. And so we've remained allied with them, although we serve people with all kinds of disabilities, both adults and children. So I just wanted to clarify that, because sometimes people say, you serve people without cerebral palsy? Yes, we do. Indeed, we do. First of all, I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this evening about our proposal. But second of all, I want to apologize for a faux pas that is in our proposal, that's in an appendices, that has some very inappropriate, politically correct language. This was from a policy that I don't know where Elizabeth found it in our electronic archives, but I do want to apologize for that language in that policy that is referring to people with intellectual disabilities. So we goofed. Sorry about that. It is not reflective of the current policies we operate on, so I just wanted to put that right out there, that we goofed in that attachment and the language that was in that attachment, because it does not reflect how we do business and how we perceive people with disabilities. Okay, I wanted to go on record saying that. We had the opportunity to come to the hearing with the committee in August, and so got to listen to some of the questions and comments of the committee who was reviewing the applications. And so I am actually going to limit my remarks to some comments that were made during that committee discussion. One of the questions or concerns that was raised about United Cerebral Palsy's proposal was that they weren't sure that we had a good handle on the community and the community's needs, that it did not appear that we had done a good assessment or a survey of that. So I wanted to explain what we did do. We began our work in Champaign in the spring of 2012, and in fact, one of the very first people we met with was Peter Tracy and Lynn to talk about what might be some unmet needs in Champaign County. We said that in our work in the region, we had plenty on our plate, and we were not interested in going into communities where we were not needed. But if indeed there was an unmet need or a perceived unmet need by parents, by providers, by referral sources in this community, that would be something that we would consider. And so we had a whole series of meetings with some families, with some providers and referral sources. Actually, as we were leaving the door of the Department of Rehab Services, Aletha Alexander was holding us sort of hostage, saying, you will come, you will come. And so the very first services that we began were employment services. We did hold a focus group meeting in this building, in fact, and in the adjacent room, in the fall of 2012. We had 30 people in attendance at this focus group, and Lynn's nodding, she was there, Barb was there. But we were asking the community again, what do you perceive are some unmet needs in the community? What are some strengths of the community? Where are some opportunities to provide services? What do people really want and need? So we had about an hour and a half to 2 hour listening session as folks went around the room and talked about their perception of the needs of the community. And we included that as part of our strategic plan. So 2 years ago, October 1st of 2012, we rented space in this building, and we began accepting referrals for employment. In that two-year period, we have aggressively placed 37 people in competitive employment in this community, and have a whole bunch of other people we're working on currently, but we have three staff. We started with one. We now have three staff. In fact, I was just out in the hall speaking to Dana about some potential additional space because of the numbers of people we're serving and the types of services we're offering. We need that additional support in order to provide those employment services.
Oh, thank you.
I'm getting dry. Thank you. So just a little history on that. So we have been here and doing good work. Maybe you haven't seen us, maybe you haven't heard of us, but we have been here doing good work for the last 2 years. In our proposal itself, we did offer a six-month timeline for startup that seemed a reasonable amount of time to start up, to locate housing, to identify and hire staff and to train staff, and to move forward with our project. There was a question from the committee about why we didn't include the lease arrangement or how we would handle the lease arrangement in the proposal. We kind of assumed that was a given and that wasn't optional. So we did not address that we were going to follow the recommendation of the RFP and the fact that we would follow the guidelines of a lease arrangement. So if the expectation was that we would lease from the 377 board and then that the individuals would be responsible to us, we would be the leasor, we assumed that was a given and why we didn't include that. The question came up about the Champaign 11 and where did they fit in the priority or the screening part of UCP's proposal? Again, the Champaign 11 would be part of the first screening. We thought we said that, but we will say it again. We would be part of the first screening process. And then we would be looking at the ACT referrals, the folks who are coming out of the state-operated facilities, along with other people from the PUNS list who are from Champaign County or whose families live in Champaign County. So we were looking at that kind of an order. The question came up about day training and developmental training. What will happen for people during the day? We certainly embrace employment first, and is something that we look at as part of our screening and consideration of every adult coming into the service system of United Cerebral Palsy. That's best practice, that's who we are, and certainly employment is a key part of our programs and services. If the individual elects not to participate in employment or that for any reason is not the best option for them at that time, we would certainly want to and be providing day training services. Or if the individual was currently served or elected to be served by another organization, that is just fine with us because that happens throughout our regional residential system, that individuals do go to other programs, they elect that, they always have choice. We don't own people. People have the right to do and go where they want to do, and we absolutely, philosophically and programmatically support that. The question came out about behavioral support. We do have a behavioralist on staff. This behavioralist writes programs for us. We feel very fortunate to be one of the agencies in the state that does have someone with a behavioral background on our staff. It does mean that they are in a consultative role. They do write the service plans. They do train and support staff in that process. So that was, again, a question that came up that I just wanted to clarify. I think, and I'm going to limit my comments and be brief. Those were the key points that I heard from the committee meeting that day. And so at this point, if there are other questions you have of me, I may not be able to answer them. Elizabeth Gebhardt, who was supposed to come with me, had a conflict at the last minute. The state of Illinois demanded her attention at 3 o'clock in a meeting. And so I am here, and I will do my very best to answer the questions, although I didn't write the proposal. So fire away.
Well, why don't we start with the evaluation committee first?
All right, I have a question. Excuse me. So whoever's chosen for this will get the benefit of a $1 per year lease on the homes. How big of an incentive is that? Was that the reason you guys decided to get into Champaign County Scylla's, or is that negligible? And is it a huge savings, and will you spend that money on other services?
Doing business with the state of Illinois is always tricky. They have an interesting rate methodology about how they pay for things. It is certainly an incentive for us. If you've done business with the state of Illinois, they never pay you the true cost of doing business. We actually raise about $400,000 a year to cover the gap of what the state doesn't pay us. And I've heard Dale many times say, we don't get paid for, 3 months of day services that we're having to fundraise for, and I know Dale is too, in that gap. And so, yes, it does help. It is an incentive to us. Does that mean that if we are not chosen, you will never see us as a residential provider? No. May not see us next week or 6 months from now, but at some point, we have that in our strategic plan, because that's what we hear is a continuum of need here.
Okay. I just wanted to ask, in your proposal, you talk very strongly about how your selection committee would make the decision as to whether you felt you could support their needs. Do you feel there is going to be a gap in regard to the clients you're serving and those who have behavioral needs? Because we do have people with behavioral challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess in your proposal, I was still confused as to whether you were really stating, yes, we will take people with behavioral needs, and yes, we are going to work to make sure they are successful. We will do whatever it takes to make them successful.
We have a behavioral screening process. Indeed, we do, because I feel it would be irresponsible to say we can serve somebody when really we can't. And so if we can meet, and I'm at a bit of a disadvantage because I haven't met the people, the Champaign 11 individuals, to know personally whether or not, you know, I haven't seen their packets, I don't know that. But I do know that we will do diligence, and we will screen every packet very carefully. And if we can meet that individual's needs through our resources or resources that we can garner through state funding, we would absolutely do that. Can I promise unequivocally we could provide services to everybody? I can't promise that. I don't know that. Okay. That's why I can't promise that.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to ask you the same question I asked the other
All right.
provider. The question I asked them, and I'm asking you, is 3 years ago, the state of Illinois, the governor's office in partnership with the Department of Human Services and the Division on Developmental Disabilities created the ACT process,
yep.
which is the Active Community Care Transitions process. A key component of that was that we would do a pretty comprehensive evaluation that included a person-centered planning piece.
Yes, I'm quite familiar with that.
That looked to say what's important mm-hmm. to the individual mm-hmm. as well as what's important for the individual. And so my question is two-part. For folks that are coming out of the state-operated developmental centers through the ACT process that's done prior to the engagement with the provider, but the individuals that are here in Champaign County, of the 11, there might be one person that's coming from a state-operated mm-hmm. developmental center. So they're either coming from the community at large through LIGAS or through the PUNS mm-hmm. list. And so my first part of the question is, how many folks have you supported through the ACT process? And then the second part is, how will you address the person-centered approach for those folks that aren't coming through the ACT process?
Okay, that's several questions, so if I don't answer them, remind me I didn't answer. So we have been a residential provider since 1980. We have a lot of experience. We started out with HIPS and SPICE and you name it, as the alphabet has gone through the state system. We have taken people historically from Lincoln and Jacksonville before it closed, Jacksonville when it closed. We've taken folks from Murray, even taken some folks from Fox in the past. So we have some history with taking folks from the SODCs through ACT and before ACT, and so we think that we've been overall pretty darn successful with those folks. It is a challenge in no uncertain terms when you are you working with somebody who has been institutionalized 40, 50, 60 years, who has no reading or writing skills and poor socialization skills, to immediately place them in the community. And I won't flinch on saying that, because that's true. That doesn't mean that Bob or Larry should not be given the opportunity to try that out and to look at how, if we can't get them employed today, what do we have to do in terms of working with that individual and skill attainment to help them to achieve that goal. And so there's our new practice that's going into effect January 1st is that every individual, regardless if they're an adult that comes into the agency, will go through the employment first process.
But what about person-centered planning?
Person-centered planning is something that we have done from day one. We worked with, what was her name? Before Kathy Picker-Terrell's group, we've been doing person-centered planning for many, many years.
Thank you.
Sure.
I have a question.
Yes.
Employment first is a laudable goal. I get that. But local businesses are only going to bear so much.
Mm-hmm.
There are some individuals that are on the awaiting placement, some individuals in the Champaign 11, and certainly people that are coming out of the state facilities, that is never going to be a goal that they're going to be able to mm-hmm. attain. So you mentioned day training, day programs, but you really didn't talk about how you were intending to implement that. I don't know that you have, are you going to have somebody that, I don't know what you mean by day, there's one sheltered workshop in town. I mean, you don't want that. So what are you going to do in day planning or day training? What if there's not an employee position?
Well, it will be center-based. But it will not all occur at the center because we intend to incorporate community integration. Our model is more on adult enrichment. What would make people's lives better, easier? What we find is that even with people who are employed, we're having families come back to us and say, it's time for Mary to move out of the house. In fact, I had a meeting yesterday with two parents, 73 years old. It's time for Julie to move. And Julie wants her own place. But Julie can't count. She can't count money. She has no idea. And she has no functional reading skills. What can you do? So we're finding even folks who are employed are coming back to us for some very, very specific skills in adult enrichment to help them to survive more in the community. And so we're looking at things like, what would you like? Would you like to take meditation? Would you like yoga? Would you like fine arts? Would you like music appreciation? Those are the kinds of things that we think adults go to at a community college. When you take a class, you take a cooking class, maybe. You may take art appreciation. Those are things that we all enjoy, and why shouldn't we be offering that as part of that adult enrichment? Does that answer your question?
Sort of.
I think writing...
You live in a utopian world, but that's okay.
I think learning to tie your shoes for 3 years is pretty silly. I think learning to write your address when there are other ways of knowing and identifying your address, but having that on your ISP for a year is pretty darn silly. And so how can we help enrich everyone's life?
Okay, we have roughly 10 minutes to go. So we have time for two questions. We'll go Mike and then Julia.
Yes.
You may have covered this in language that I am not capable of understanding, so I'm sorry if I'm treading old ground. What experience does your agency have in operating these small group homes?
We have been in the residential provider business since 1980. So we have operated group homes. I was saying to Mark, they've been called many things. They started out as HIP, then they went to SPICE, and now they are SILAs, and we have been in all of those versions of that. We support 17 SILAs right now of varying size. We have several two-person ones. So several three, it's in our application, three-person, four-person.
We don't have your application.
I'm sorry. But small, 3 to 4 persons are ideal.
Thank you.
Julian.
I was going to ask about because you said you had this long-term residence experience. I was wanting to know something about what your experience is. So now my question is, do you have any of these in Champaign County?
We do not. We have them in Bloomington, and we have them in Springfield.
Why not?
Because we, as I explained, we came into this community about 2.5 years ago, and the very first and biggest pressing issue we were told was community-based employment. And so that's where we started. The second, as we began to look at it, is we were asked to do day services. We've been talked to about residential. But we really are very diligent and like to make sure that we're doing a good job with what it is we're doing before we go to the next step. And so when this RFP became available, it seemed like a natural segue to pursue day and residential services that seemed to be the right time.
So do you think that this proposal is asking you to do anything different than what you have done up until now?
It's never easy to start from the ground up with a program development. When we took over services in Bloomington, that was because two different organizations went out of business, and so we assumed their programs and services. We started residential services in Bloomington when a for-profit provider went out of business and nobody would take the individuals, and they were going to have to go to a state op. Malik was the name of the company. Ron Malik, and so the state of Illinois stepped in and said, UCP, would you consider taking this group home? So that's how we got started in Bloomington. Our vocational services started when Occupational Developmental Center decided to close their doors on July 1st, about 5 years ago, and we were brought in again by the State Department of Rehab Services 1 week prior to that. People were job coached by ODC on Friday. They were job coached by UCP Monday morning. It was a seamless transition. No individual lost their job. And that's how we started those services. So that was easier for us, starting from the ground up and hiring all new staff and developing that. Will take time, is why we put in the timeline about 6 months.
I don't want to keep...
Okay. Any other questions? A short one?
I have one quick question. Coming into Champaign County, in staffing, you have 4 group homes. How many people will you need to find, and will you find that many people to staff those homes?
Our staffing plan, I believe, was outlined in the proposal. I know you don't have it, but I don't either. Okay. So, we're even on that. But we do have a ratio that is developed based upon the individual needs. And so that will vary by home because it will be based on the assessment that is done and then submitted to the state for the level of support that individual needs. It might be one-on-one staffing for everybody in the house. There might be that level of need. It might be that the assessments show that there are two staff needed on duty. So it will really be dependent upon each resident of the household.
Does anyone else have a comment or a question? We have a couple minutes.
I do have one more question. If you have difficulty as an organization securing employment for your clients at the supported employment and finding, companies, Walmart or Schnucks, whomever, to assist you in securing employment for your clients, are you opposed to reaching out to any resource agencies within our community to assist you in that process? As opposed to working internally with the people that you may currently have who you have contracts with?
I think I understand your question. Are you asking if we would partner with other agencies who might be doing similar services?
Yes.
Yes, of course. It's a big job. But we have a very good track record of supported employment, and we have a very good track record of community-based employment. And so far, we have been... Our primary partner has been Department of Voc Rehab Services.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity to clarify those issues, and I appreciate your attention. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Now we have 15 minutes to have the evaluation committee have a discussion. And after the 15 minutes, then we'll do a paper ballot. Okay?
I have a question. This is a procedural question. Do we want, the other folks did stay. They were out in the hallway.
They can come back.
Is that it? Okay. Yes. For a discussion?
We'll wait a couple of minutes and let them come back. You can go get them.
Right, I can get them now.
Lynn, I'll take care of that.
Yeah. Okay, I guess we're ready for a short discussion among the evaluation committee members. So why don't we try and let every person have an opportunity to talk before we, don't ask too many questions. Let everybody have a chance to ask at least one, okay? So who wants to start?
I'll go ahead and start. I want to say going into this, I felt like IAG put together a better proposal. I really thought it was pretty impressive. But listening to them talk, I'm not convinced that they're sold on the idea. I think that, frankly, they may be happy if we chose somebody else. That's the impression I get, that they're not convinced that this idea is going to work, that they think the way they do it would be better. And that as soon as they're awarded this, they may come back and say, now let's talk about doing it differently.
Thank you. Next comment?
I'm just going to add to Dave's comments.
Can't hear.
I'm going to add to his comments. My concern with AIAG is that I guess I don't really like the whole rental thing. I understand the philosophy behind it, but I need to know that from in my case that when I'm gone, that my children are going to be taken care of. They are both developmentally disabled adults, and them owning a home without a something to fall back in terrifies me. I don't come from a large family. It's certainly not the remaining family I have and friends to pick that up, but that whole concept really bothers me. And like Dave, I'm sort of afraid that they're going to come back and say, this is not what we really want to do. That would be my concern.
Thank you.
I probably have a little bit of a different perspective based on my current position. Consumer-controlled housing is something that the federal government and the state has been advocating for some time, where we separate housing from supports. Because we believe strongly that if a person is unhappy with the support services they are receiving, they shouldn't have to move. Their housing is their housing, and their supports are their supports. And so it's important, and the state looks at this is that housing, we advocate for the separation of housing from supports, and the way that people are empowered is by control of their housing. So we've advocated for some time, and the feds are now advocating that we make this separation for consumer-controlled housing. It doesn't mean that the person would not be allowed to stay in that house just because they lease it. In fact, the feds are now requiring that going forward that that individuals with disabilities have the same rights of tenancy that any other person would have. And right now in Illinois, we have two types of homes that are, they're licensed either as individually controlled or agency controlled. And as I said, the state and the feds are moving more towards an individual control, but we understand that that will take some time. And so we're okay with folks having agency controlled property, but I just wanted to clarify that the fact that an agency-controlled property doesn't offer any more security as far as the property than an individually controlled. And in fact, the state's going to require that every person going forward in agency-controlled properties are going to eventually have to have some sort of a housing agreement with the provider, just as if they were signing the lease themselves. So I just wanted to clarify that point. As far as agency versus individually controlled. I thought both proposals, or all the proposals that I reviewed, were well written. I thought they answered a lot of the questions that were required by the board. I felt that IAG had a little more of a stronger proposal around customized employment and individual options for serving folks in more integrated settings versus more traditional types of opportunities for folks. I have worked a lot with several providers throughout the state of Illinois. I know just firsthand from our experience is that IAG tends to be an agency that the state goes to for folks with more significant challenges, and we've actually, the state of Illinois has asked them to expand their services into some geographic areas where we were struggling to find some supports and services, and they've been willing to do that and have committed to being in those areas for indefinitely, and I just wanted to mention those things.
Thank you.
I would like to share that I have a lot of concerns with the Cerebral Palsy Association simply because my perception from their proposal and from her presentation is that they are not going to definitively support people with behavioral challenges. And I think that given that has been such a struggle and such an obstacle for people with behavioral challenges and their families, that's very, very concerning. I have to say, you know, I was impressed with the information, some of it in their proposal, but I have to say that I feel very strongly about IAG and their ability to support people and provide individualized programs that, and the fact that they will work hard to make the client successful regardless of the challenges that they face. I understand your concerns for the lease, the issue with the leasing, but I think they wouldn't have come here today. I mean, they understand the, you know, the stipulations of the referendum. So I feel like if they weren't willing to work with the board, they would not have come here today. So.
Thanks. Any other comments from the evaluation committee? Okay, Lynn.
Okay. We said this at the meeting that we had on the 22nd. Many of us were impressed with the quality of all the applications. And I do think that if we were talking about a moment in time where it was just people coming off from PUNS because they're transitioning from school, you know, and just want to have an adult life, then there's room in this community for all three providers. But the moment that we're in is partly motivated by some of the people who want to return to Champaign County are not here because they need more behavioral support than we maybe have had infrastructure for. And I was reminded of that at a meeting that we attended this morning with law enforcement from several of the local agencies and with behavioral support providers, that it continues to be very, very difficult to get behavioral support in this community. So because that's the population which triggered this conversation in the first place, and that's the moment we're in, I think that, in my mind at least, IAG's experience with supporting people with more complex behavioral needs gives them a little edge, in my mind.
A comment I'd like to make is that when we designed the process for folks to come out of the state developmental centers, we knew that the folks in the state developmental centers, many of them have lived in the community and then had not experienced success and moved back into a state developmental center. And so when we created that process, it was important that we created a process that allowed the person to get out and have the services and supports they need built around that individual based on their individual needs. There are 240 service providers, over 240 community service providers in the state of Illinois. In the ACT process, when we asked providers to step forward to participate with the state in serving some of the most challenging folks, for instance, when we closed Jacksonville Developmental Center, 64% of the people that came out of Jacksonville Developmental Center had a dual diagnosis of both intellectual and developmental disabilities as well as some sort of behavioral challenge or mental health challenge. We tried to create a process that we thought would be supportive of those folks, and we feel like the process we created has been fairly successful in that the majority, if not of the 130-something folks that transitioned into the community, we've only had three folks that experienced challenges, five, and three of them have returned to the community with two that did not. But I just want to bring up the fact that of the 200-something plus providers, we've had 82 people express an interest in supporting people with significant challenging behavior that have stepped forward, 50 that have committed to doing that, and both agencies are in that 50 that have committed to doing that. When we looked at the closure of Jacksonville, we had 12 providers that stepped up and supported folks. Five supported the bulk of those folks, and IAG was one of the five that supported the most individuals coming out with some significant challenges. Just facts, that's what they are.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Now I think we have to take a vote. So you have your pink ballot. You just need to make your selection, and we'll give it to Stephanie to count.
Just so everybody knows the process, after the evaluation committee votes, that will be a recommendation which then needs to be ratified by the Mental Health Board and the Developmental Disability Board. That's why you all are not voting on this one. Stephanie, could you go to the isolation booth, please?
As someone from the audience, Patty Walters wants it to be clarified who actually got to vote.
The evaluation committee. There are 10 people on the evaluation committee. Mr. Doyle, and then the Debbie, I'm sorry. the four people at that end of the table. The president and the vice president of the Mental Health Board, the president and the vice president of the Developmental Disability Board, and Lynn and me. So there's a total of 10. We have one member of the evaluation committee not here, so there are 9 votes.
The vote was unanimous for IAG, 9 votes.
Thank you, committee. Okay, now at this point, we need a motion to ratify the evaluation committee recommendation.
I'll make a motion.
Whoever you want to put first. We both have our hands.
Well,
I've got it written out.
Good. I'll defer to them.
She can move and you can second, Mike.
I move to approve the recommendation of the SILA Expansion Evaluation Committee to enter into an agreement with the individual advocacy group to expand SILA capacity in Champaign County in accordance with the specification of the Request for Proposals 2014. That's
2015.
It says 001. That's my motion.
Okay. Mike, you wanted a second?
Second.
It has been moved in second that we offer a lease agreement to IAG. Congratulations, IAG. And now we just need to vote.
Discussion.
Questions, discussion. No more discussion? Okay. All in favor?
No, it has to be roll call.
Roll call? Okay, Stephanie, will you call the roll?
Alan Danavy?
Yes.
Bill Gleason?
No.
Susan Fowler?
Yes.
Dolores Henry?
Yes.
Mike McClellan?
Yes.
Tom Moore?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
Deborah Townsend?
Yes.
Astrid Bergson?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So now we have time for maybe a little bit more business. So before we adjourn, I just wanted to offer a moment of memoria and silence at the recent passing of Valerian Somerville, who's the mother of one of our employees, Chandra Somerville, and also to Mike McClellan, who's a longtime member of our board, at the passing of his brother, Mark McClellan, who was a decorated Vietnam-era soldier.
Thank you, Lynn and Stephanie, for encouraging me to make that last trip. I was debating whether I should run down there or not. I went, and that was my last visit with my brother. And for Peter and Mark, I will never forget that you were there. And it's been very difficult. I got through the anger stage while he was living, but I'm having trouble with this acceptance. And this all goes back to Vietnam and Agent Orange, and you've heard me talk on occasion about his treatment and difficulties. And sometimes I got even more emotional than I am now. But he is at peace, and he is in a good place. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
To all of you. Nancy also sent me a note.
And Val Somerville, in case you were not aware, was a talented vocalist and a counselor and a teacher in Urbana 116 School District for, I think, 35 years.
And the long-suffering wife of Willie Somerville.
So she will certainly be missed too, Mike. Thank you. And now we need a motion to adjourn. Tom?
So moved. Oh, second.
Asterisk, second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Opposed?
We have a couple minutes for a bathroom break, and then we will convene the Developmental Disabilities Board. And Mental Health Board members are welcome to stay. They will be taking up the same issue, the motion that you have passed.
And I'd like to thank the Evaluation Committee for all your hard work. A lot of work. Thank you.
A lot of
yeah.